Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What's the connection between social justice and environmental sustainability? Can humor help us deal with climate change? The University of South Dakota hosts actor Peterson Toscano tonight in Old Main's Farber Hall for a joint keynote address for the Diversity Symposium and Earth Day celebration. That's free, open to the public. It starts at 7 p.m. Toscano is a regular contributor to Huffington Post and The Porch magazine. He speaks on a range of topics, including LGBT issues, privilege, religion, and climate change. He's the host of Citizens Climate Radio, and his film Transfigurations, Transgressing Gender in the Bible is on the film festival circuit now, and he joins me now in the studio at in Vermilion. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it is awesome to be here.
I say actor, but it's actor, radio host, writer, activist. It's all kinds of things. How do you define yourself?
Overachiever.
Perfect. All right, let's talk about the message that you're going to bring, because there's so much, and I want to direct people to your website at petersontoscano.com, because the full range of what you do is represented there. What's the message you'll bring to Vermilion tonight?
Well, it's weird, basically, what I'm doing tonight. My partner, in fact, says that I confuse people because I make these weird connections that seem to have no obvious connection. So I literally will be looking at some LGBT issues, including the weird almost 20-year journey I spent trying to de-gay myself through gay conversion therapy. Wow. And I do comedy about that tragedy. I'll tell an LGBTQ-friendly Bible story. I will reframe the story of Joseph in Genesis and show some of this research I've done and reveal that this character, there's some gender differences that we don't always pick up, but it's there actually in the Hebrew, in the text. And then I will look at LGBTQ responses to climate change, that climate change is a LGBTQ issue that affects us differently and that is desperately needing our attention, our creativity and our history and resilience that we've had from our own history.
Talk a little bit about your journey toward environmentalism or sustainability or however you would define it, because you didn't begin this way. You come at it from a slightly different angle.
Yeah. In fact, my friends are really kind of confused because I've never ever talked about environmental issues. But it came through my partner, Glenn. He was freaking out about climate change one day, and I was like, we never talk about climate change. What's that? And he then started sending me articles, and I began to see, wow, you know, this is bigger than I expected. Yeah. And it's affecting people in ways I didn't expect. So, like, climate change affects women globally more than it affects men, which was such a weird fact. I said, I'm curious. I need to know more about this. And I started studying about drought, and everything was hitting me in my head. And then suddenly I read this article that just hit me in the gut, where it said on a warmer planet, we're going to see more crop failures leading to malnutrition and people being, you know, starving and on the move, migration and political instability. And they said, and on a warmer planet, we may even see the disruption of wheat production leading to a global shortage of pasta products. And I'm Italian-American, and I, you know, it just suddenly, for all the stuff I read about climate change, this was the thing that hit me right at home. I was like, this is my culture, this is my life. And I wish I weren't so shallow, right? I just wish I was a much more advanced human being. But but an issue this big, sometimes that's what it takes. And then attached to that string of spaghetti, of course, is a whole host of other issues, and that cracked the door open for me.
All right. So it hits home for everybody in different ways, and sometimes that's what's in your cupboard or what's in your backyard is more relevant to you than the polar bears.
Yeah.
Because you've only seen one in the zoo.
That's right. You know, and in fact, I have a whole funny bit I do about polar bears where this one character of mine, I'm a character actor, and he's like, all this talk about climate change, sure, you know, it's warming up in the Arctic. It's also warming in Central America where there's this disease, this fungus that's spreading like wildfire, attacking coffee plants. It's called coffee leaf rust. It's a real thing. Look it up. Now, it's going to sound awful, but I think I could live without polar bears. But a world without coffee, that's a dystopian future that I can't face. And that's silly, but almost always after a show, someone will come up to me and say, so the coffee thing, is that real? Like, yes. And attached to that, of course, are the growers.
Right.
Who are already, you know, not getting a fair share for what they do, and they're moving to cities which are overcrowded and dangerous, and they feel like they need to move out of their countries and move north into our borders, and that's an immigration issue, and it's all connected to that cup of coffee.
Yeah. You love Walt Whitman. I love Walt Whitman. What is his message, and how did you sort of connect with, you know, what he was writing about and telling us?
When I freaked out about climate change, I took a year off to study climate science because I knew nothing about it. And I kept turning to Walt Whitman. And the thing that's curious about Walt Whitman, he was in his 30s. And he hadn't produced anything in his life, really. He just was knocking around. He was this sort of lost cause of a person trying this and that. And then all of a sudden, something happened. And he produced The Leaves of Grass. And one scholar thinks it was a time when he went to the opera and he heard this opera singer, Mariette Albone, and it just pierced him. And he heard this real art that just moved him as an artist. So then he stepped out and produced this Leaves of Grass. Well, a few years later, there was another moment he had like this when he visited his brother in the hospital during the Civil War. And he saw all these young men, 16, 17, 18-year-old men, dying all over the place. And he had this other moment where he saw that he was needed and his art wasn't enough. And in Greek, in Koine Greek, which the Bible's written in, there's this word apokalypsis, which means revelation or apocalypse. And it's as if a curtain's been pulled back and one sees what's hidden from sight and it jars you awake. And I think about Whitman, he had these two moments of apocalypse that shook him and changed him so that not only was he a great artist, but such a great humanitarian. Mm. And with an issue as big as climate change, we need the artists and we need the humanitarians and we need the people with empathy. It's not just an environmental issue. It's just not a science issue. It's a human issue.
When you took this year off and you learned what you learned and then what next? How did you decide? It's one thing to have the information and to find the sources that you trust so you have the accurate information. How do you move forward? What's the Leaves of Grass?
Well, for me, I created a website called climatestew.com, and I created a podcast, Climate Stew, and I have 50 episodes up there. And I use comedy and storytelling and characters to try to look at climate change from different issues. Like, how does it affect our pets? How does it affect the game of golf? Like, whatever it takes. I figured everyone has skin in the game. I'm just going to try to hit everything. And that gave me this sort of explosion of creativity. And then I wrote a play, a one-person show called Does This Apocalypse Make Me Look Fat? It's a comedy about broken bodies, large and small. So through art and performance, I began to try to connect with audiences. And I realized that people who weren't already into this stuff could maybe take 15 minutes before they started breaking down. And that's when I realized I needed to have this more interdisciplinary approach where I could talk about other issues like LGBT issues and the Bible or whatever and insert certain concepts that then could be applied to climate. And so that in a way I'm talking about climate the whole night, although I only mentioned it the last third. Yeah. And that's been really helpful. And then becoming the host of Citizens Climate Radio really helped, too, to expand the reach. And I have some of the most amazing guests and really interesting topics. So later this month, we'll be looking at mental health and climate change and how it affects people who go through extreme weather events, but also people who are doing climate work and how to protect ourselves from the mental distress of that.
Do you find that people come to you and want, you know, an action, an activity? Like, what's the, you know, when is it good enough? What do we have to do next? Is it just start small and do something, change your light bulbs? What are those sort of tangible things that you think are going to gain traction toward addressing climate change from those of us?
Yeah.
Who are not in major leadership positions.
That's right. And people, they want that, right? What can I do? And one of the big messages I'm trying to get across is doing individual actions is noble and right. But on an issue this big, it's like the issue of slavery in America. When this nation literally ran on human labor, that was forced labor of people who were kidnapped and brought to this country. It wasn't enough that in your own home you opposed slavery. The system had to change. And in America, we need to see systems changes. At our universities, we need to see systems changes. And that may feel overwhelming to people, but we actually have so many examples of this. And I like to look at the HIV/AIDS crisis, where you had this small group of people that most people could care less about. In fact, many people despised. Hospitals in New York weren't taking AIDS patients. Funeral parlors wouldn't bury our bodies. And a group of totally inexperienced young people, for the most part, began to do collective action and began to do really creative stuff and changed not only things related to AIDS, but literally when we go to the doctor today, the patient-doctor relationship has been altered because of the work of those activists. They changed systems. Mm. And we need to encourage ourselves with those sort of examples and also see that that's what needs to change, how we get our energy, the choices that we have as consumers, because we're being asked to do things that are actually almost impossible because we have so few choices.
Right. So how much of the system change or the activism can come from a place where people might not expect, say, the queer community?
Well, you know, it's interesting how it doesn't take everybody, right? It takes, I mean, right now there are 40 million people in America, according to this Yale study, that are alarmed about climate change. That's a lot of people, actually. Right. And they can really put pressure on systems. And through Citizens Climate Lobby, this group that I'm part of, we've been talking to members of Congress for the past almost 10 years now. When we started, there was no Republican who would acknowledge climate change was a real thing. Now there's a bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus in the House of Representatives that has 72 members. Mm. Half of them are Republicans who are saying climate change is real, it's human caused, and we need to do something about it. And that came about from us relentlessly going year after year with about 1,000 people, and it keeps growing, and speaking to members of Congress and persuading them there's political will behind this. So, you know, I think that the problem in America is there's a silence around climate change and people are afraid to talk about it. And so that, and part of it is coming up with more personal ways of talking about it so that people can connect to it in a personal way.
Are you optimistic? Are you hopeful? And the reason I'm asking that is because when you think of, you know, your life, there was a time when I think if you're like me, you couldn't imagine gay marriage all of a sudden being legal, and then it was. And so we see in our time things that don't happen and take an incredibly long time, and then we see doors opening and all of a sudden there it is. And we think, well, how did this happen so quickly? Because we thought it wasn't going to, and it was a long fight. Are you optimistic about climate change in a way that makes sense, you think?
In a very weird way, I am, in spite of all the evidence to the contrary. But partly it's because I study history. My partner's from South Africa, who was part of the anti-apartheid struggle, and they just were at it for years. And not only was it not getting better, it was getting significantly worse towards the end. But they were laying all the groundwork. And there's all this stuff going on behind the scenes that people didn't know. And then when the changes happened, they happened so rapidly, it took people's breath away. And I really do believe that. And as a Quaker, which I'm a Quaker now, we have this belief that of God is in everyone, that ultimately everyone can do some pretty amazing things. And there are times in history when you see this where suddenly people just get on board. America, we're very slow to act. But when we do, we often do it with such an intensity. And once there's the political will, we've been polluting in so many ways in this country. In a year, will we be breathtaking the kind of changes that we can make. It's just about getting people engaged. And I think I in my head, as an artist and as a visionary, I can see that happening.
As a Quaker, how did you find your way back to faith after conversion therapy that was based on Christianity?
It was hard because I was told you couldn't be gay and Christian. And even going into most Christian churches that were welcoming, I experienced post-traumatic stress because we sang some of the same songs, it looked the same. I walked into a Quaker meeting and they were like, come as you are, literally. And there wasn't a lot of preaching either. And I got to sit and reflect and be still. And that thought that I had something valuable to say, to contribute, was radically opposed to everything I actually had heard, because I was told as a gay guy, I needed to repent and flee. And that was really amazing to find a community of people where I could be myself, not just as a gay guy, but as this weird artist guy who, you know, I have a very unconventional life in many ways. And they're just like, bring it on.
Now, you can see Peterson Toscano tonight at USD Old Main's Farber Hall at 7 p.m. for the keynote address. And that is for the Diversity Symposium and Earth Day's celebration here in Vermilion. Find him at petersontoscano.com. We'll put a link up on our website, listen.sdpb.org. And Citizens Climate Radio, where do people find that?
You can find it at SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Peterson, thank you so much for being here. Come back.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks so much.